Welcome to another of my shows. I am your host and producer, Isabel Jubes. This is an archive show of La Ventana Americana. You can find this show and all the information related to it, together with more of my archive productions, on StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. Visit our website and be part of this, giving me your opinions and more about your ideas. This is La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
Esto es La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana de Radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
From KCSU Stanford 90.1.
Desde KCSU Stanford.
KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM.
This is La Ventana Americana from KCSU Stanford
90.1. KZSU
90.1 FM. The program is La Ventana Americana.
A window to the Latin universe from Stanford to the world. I am Isabel Jubes.
And I'm Elizabeth Trachtenberg.
Welcome, bienvenido. And welcome back to La Ventana Americana. This is our second hour, and today we're talking with Dr. Marcelo Vasquez and Dr. Pascal Lee about space exploration and exploration into Mars.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. We have ignition of the RS-68 engines. 2, 1, 0. We have liftoff of the United Launch Alliance Delta IV Heavy Rocket carrying the NRO L-65 mission to the National Reconnaissance Office.
Travels also to communicate. Do we have any communication, any new sound there from some life-making noise?
Well, you know, when you drive up and down 280, the big dish that you see actually belongs to Stanford. It's a very interesting and important dish because it actually helps us communicate with Mars as well.
If you look to the left, you see the accelerator.
But the idea of SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, is that, first of all, how do you define intelligence? Okay, so it's arbitrary, of course. And what we are looking for are other societies that may be physically very different from us, but are somehow able to communicate using radio waves. Okay. So why radio waves? Because it's something that's universal. It's not specific to the Earth. It's part of the laws of physics as we experience them. And so the expectation is that, okay, the laws of physics should be the same elsewhere. Another society, if it becomes smart enough to have technology, it will come up with radio waves, radio telescopes. And radio telescopes are designed the way they're designed because of physics. It has nothing to do with our particular sense of aesthetics. It's really the way they need to be because that's how they need to work. So the expectation here is that we are looking for other societies out there that would have achieved at least that level of technological capability to communicate using radio waves. And as you know, radio waves travel at the speed of light.
At least it's easier to get. You don't have to physically go there.
The nearest star is 4.3 light years away. Okay. The farthest star in our galaxy is approximately 100,000 light years away. So let's say that there's a civilization out on that last star out there, okay, at the end of our galaxy. It's not even at the end of the universe, just at the end of our galaxy, okay? So for us to see a signal today from them, it would have had to be transmitted by them 100,000 years ago. And of course, if we see the signal now and we somehow understand that they're saying Buenos dias, okay? Okay, so then we reply, let's assume that we understand even their language, we can reply, it will take another 100,000 years to get back there. Yeah. So for one thing, they might not even be there anymore. They might have self-destroyed, or they might have become much more advanced than we are. So there are many possibilities here, and the distances are so great that even with signals that are traveling at the speed of light, we are faced with this very daunting distance to those stars out.
At least we have wormholes, right?
Yeah.
Well, wormholes are possible shortcuts. Yeah, Marcelo's right. Wormholes are possible shortcuts, but they're still at the edge of what we understand about physics and the structure of the universe. But a wormhole would be a place where the shape of the universe locally is bent and distorted enough by mass that it somehow creates a connection to another part of itself.
And if you start with that, with my seven-year-old, he will tell you about spaghettization, like if you get into a wormhole.
That's right. So it's not clear if a signal could be preserved through a wormhole. Certainly matter, like, you know, the body of a human being would be stretched out to a spaghetti. And that would be putting it nicely. It would be, you know, not good.
Ground control to Major Tom. Lock your Soyuz hatch and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Detach from station and may God's love be with you. Ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirts you wear. But it's time to guide the capsule if you dare.
And that was a revised version of David Bowie's Space Oddity, recorded by Commander Chris Hartfield on board of the International Space Station.
This is La Ventana Americana. If you have any questions or want to know more about today's show, you can go to laventanaamericana.com.
Driving coast to coast last summer, and all of a sudden we hit this city, and we stopped there, and we didn't know why everything was green and monsters and things.
Oh, Roswell.
Roswell.
In New Mexico,
right.
Yes, New Mexico.
So we went to the museum there. What do you think about that? I'm sure that you're familiar with that.
That's awesome.
Area 51.
Zone 50-something?
Well,
I have ideas about what happened.
You want to start, Pascal?
No, I have ideas about what happened at Roswell, but I want to hear Marcelo's first.
Okay.
Well, you know, I used to work for 11 years at Brookhaven National Laboratory in New York. And I meet a lot of people from my town, from my block and where I used to live. And they ask me, he always asks me, tell me the truth. How many aliens do you have over there? So there is a kind of fantastic idea. I was into that for many, many years when I was young, and it's a fabulous idea to be visiting by aliens, fly saucers and aliens. Fantastic. I love that. But, you know, when you get trained in real science and you try to see the life in a different scope, it's a disappointment because all the data said that it's really not true, or at least, you know. But anyway, so the Roswell case is one of the more typical one and more famous case on the people that believe that were visiting by aliens. And apparently in 1947, there was a crash landing for UFO, and it was covered up with the Air Force at that time. And at the beginning, it was not controlled properly. So even officials from the base that recovered the wreckage also announced to the people that they discovered a fly saucer, and they tried to cover themselves. So that became the myth of the Roswell case. And you will find millions of people that believe that it was an alien recover. It was analyzed and stored for studies, and we used the technology to create what we have now and many technologies that we use daily. And other people said, a lot of people believe, there was crash landing of a secret project at that time to detect Russian atomic bombs. So there was a kind of balloons, very sophisticated balloons by that time, that was trying to keep secret, because in the middle of the Cold War, that was one of the more secret operations at that time. And that was kind of the origin of the whole thing. And that created a folk story and tradition that was fascinating. And one of the big issues is the creation of the Alien Museum in Roswell. And it's fantastic because they have all this paraphernalia, also aliens and dissections, and fantastic. It's fantastic in a way. But, you know, in terms of scientific and data, is quite, from my point of view, not real.
Pascal.
Okay, so allow me to speculate, tell you what I think happened at Roswell. It's, first of all, important to, as Marcelo did, sort of bring up some of the key observations of the time, okay, the reports. What is reported to have happened is that something fell from the sky. There was metallic foil involved in the debris. As the story goes, three weird-looking bodies were recovered, two dead and one alive. And these were beings that were a bit like humans, but had gray skin, big heads. And again, one was essentially recovered alive. Okay, and all of this was whisked away to an Air Force base. And of course, at that point, it fueled this myth that the Air Force had recovered the remains of an alien crashed spacecraft. All right, so my speculation is that what really happened is that at the time, the Air Force was probably flying high-altitude balloons. That's pretty well established. And one of the things they were doing with these balloons is that they were going to high up in altitude and then allowing the balloons to drift across the Earth over the Soviet Union to take pictures of stuff. Yes, information gathering. And what I believe might have been happening is that they were trying to train monkeys, chimpanzees specifically, to actually be the pilots, if you will, of these machines, to take some actions, like, for example, press a button when it was time to take a picture or do this or that. And also they were interested in understanding better the survival of human beings down the road at high altitude. And so we're doing experiments with monkeys. And the United States has had a long history of using monkeys, including in its space program, as the basic lab animal, if you will, for human flight. My guess is that what was flying in New Mexico at the time was a high-altitude balloon packed with three chimpanzees. And they might have been shaved because you are putting electrodes. And the chimpanzee has gray skin, gray to pink. And plus, you put it in a pressurized suit anyway, in a pressure suit. So they would have really looked like aliens if they were recovered by humans who were not expecting to see chimpanzees that were shaved and dressed up like astronauts.
Wow. So you think that they acted in good...
So I think that if that is the case, if that is the case, you can understand what all the rest. The metal foil was just mylar. the beginnings of Mylar, which is used to track a balloon using a radar. The bodies were chimpanzees, and why were they recovered quickly and hidden? It's because, well, we don't want to let the Soviet Union know what we're up to, and et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know this for a fact. I have, you know, speculated about this before, but it's a plausible explanation between what was reported to have happened at the time and what is actually consistent with history. I think it would not be surprising if that was essentially what happened. It would explain the cover-up, because indeed there would have been a cover-up, but not for the reasons we think.
So if we believe that what the government said, and with all the caveats of that, what journalists tried to get the information from the government, the project at that time was called Project Mogul. The Project Mogul was a series of balloons, that several balloons on top of another, and they have some microphones and radiation detectors. They were drifting in a high in the atmosphere to measure the sound and the level of radiation from atomic bombs from Russia. Basically, that is what the official explanation after many, many years of secrecy. In terms of how the story wrap up after many years of the alien cadavers, the things, the story changed dramatically year by year. So what happened in reality at the beginning in 1947 changed dramatically. And the real history of this incident came around, I think, early 80s or late 70s, when a journalist put together all this idea. And this story changed dramatically, depending on what you're talking about. That. So the final version of the event, sometimes it's a collection of stories that has not been confirmed completely. So, in, you know, the typical eyes, the big head and thing is a very typical image of an alien that surfaces from the 60s, 70s, kind of repetition many, many, many times. So, but officially, that project, it was unmanned. There was no chimpanzees, as far as we know, if we believe the government, of course. And that was a project from Columbia University and the Air Force to detect atomic explosion from Russia. Rest is all a wonderful story that I would like to believe that it was true. Unfortunately, I think it's not. But
Marcelo, that's very interesting. Why don't you give me a call at the office tomorrow?
That would be wonderful. Have you experienced a serious trauma or life-threatening event causing you to suffer from anxiety, sleeplessness, anger, or recurrent troubling memories? If so, you may be helped by the Stanford study providing a free non-medication treatment and brain scans for post-traumatic stress disorder. Individuals with no PTSD symptoms can still enroll for brain scans only. For more information about this ad and other studies, call 650-498-5151 or email psychiatric@stanford.edu.
The soundtrack of the 11th Doctor theme. I am the Doctor, of course, from Doctor Who, BBC.
But these theories are something that we can see. The Egyptians, they have these big-headed figures, and other cultures, they are saying, again, maybe I'm reading too many comics books, but or conspiracy
I think it's a
theories.
Fascinating relationship for many years of a tie point in terms of different cultures, ancient cultures, and see the connection with space entities or the natural vision at that time of what the stars, the suns, and you for sure you discover very strange things that you cannot explain, like you know, at that time how in the hell they were able to develop this or describe this on four. When I was young, I was a kind of fanatic of this. That's a kind of my thing. So, and I remember a lot of people were completely mesmerized by a German guy called Erich von Däniken. This guy make his life dedicated to make money with trying to put together the relationship between ancient cultures and civilizations on Earth with extraterrestrial. And he was great because he was traveling all around the world trying to discover this incredible civilization with strange building, strange messages. And there was a kind of obvious connection. This is from star, from aliens. And let me tell you, I was able to travel in South America, and I was able to visit Nazca. It's mm-hmm. a wonderful yeah. place in Peru, mm-hmm. in which you can encounter gigantic figures in between a valley and in mm-hmm. the Nazca Valley. And the only thing you can see these figures is from the air, flying around. And the question is how they were able to design and build the things. And also, what are the intention of this construction? But not only that, there are some images or some construction that they created on the valley that looks like airports, basically. This is typical a tarmac of an airport. Yeah. So something needs to be landing over there. So there is some strange thing in all civilization. But at the end, I think we need to give more credit to our human beings. We're very creative, very, very ingenious, thousands of years ago to create some magnificent sense. So I think it's a kind of intention of ourselves to tie to aliens or kind of space relationship that is very natural. I really love too. But, you know, we need to give more credit to our human civilization too.
Yeah, as an architect, I don't understand what is the big sensation about the Nazca part, because I can make a plan and kind of picture how it will look from a satellite. I don't need to be in the satellite to imagine how it's going to be when I build it or how my house is going to be looked at from the Google satellite. Even if I'm not there or taking a picture, I can predict it. So I bet they were able to draw some plans and follow them. So it's not that amazing.
I agree. And this is a very rational interpretation or analysis. But you need to be there. And if you see that personally, you mm-hmm. question that, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. It's so magnificent. It's so incredible mm-hmm. that it will put in doubt sometimes, even against your rational interpretation.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
And the idea of a pyramid is actually it's the most basic form. It's obvious that if I don't have a lot of technology, the base has to be bigger than the top, and the obvious figure will be a pyramid. Why do an alien have to tell us, go and build a pyramid? Actually, it will be awesome if we will build an sphere. That will be amazing. Really remarkable if they build an spheric building floating in there. That will actually scare me out.
Defying
but
gravity.
A pyramid, or even a cube before we had the structures, like that will be scary, but a pyramid is not that. It's actually the obvious choice.
But come on, it's so sexy when we have aliens with us and help the Egyptians to create the building and transport the big rocks through the desert with some levitational apparatus.
Nice. That
so come on.
So, but Carl, for example, are you taking these things as a joke? How you consider these things?
The scientists.
I think it's really, I mean, as much as we enjoy and are entertained by all these ideas, it's really important to emphasize that there is none of these stories of ancient aliens, none of the supposed artifacts that are attributed to them, none of these structures or designs or layouts in Nazca require some alien intervention for us to explain them. They were done by human beings, and human beings are relatively smart creatures. We are capable of doing this, and human beings who were living thousands of years ago were not intellectually less capable than we are today. They are pretty much the same. And I think it's almost an insult to them that we are not recognizing their artfulness, their talent, their ingenuity, by somehow claiming that, you know, there's no way they could have done this without the help of aliens.
Yeah, I full agree with that, Pascal. Yeah.
You know, the other thing that I was going to say is that you even hear this in modern times. There are people who somehow claim that we never landed on the moon, and they come up with reasons that are only showing that they don't understand physics. Or, I mean, they point out, for example, that why is the flag waving on the moon if there's no air? Well, the point is, if an object oscillates, it doesn't need air to oscillate. A pendulum oscillates not because there's air, but because there's gravity. And there is gravity on the moon. If you set a flagpole in motion, it will oscillate and the flag will wave. There are very basic explanations for all of these claims to the contrary. And to me, when people say, you know, we faked the moon landing 45 years ago, or almost 45 years ago, it's two things. It tells me two things. One is that you're never done with science education. You really have to continue constantly reminding people that science is important, and you have to, you know, develop a rational mind. And that's actually partly why I wrote a book for kids. But the other thing that it tells me is that it's almost the best compliment you could pay to the engineers and the technicians who got humans to the moon 45 years ago. It's a compliment in the sense that 45 years later, there are still people who believe that that was not possible. And what better compliment to an engineer to have achieved something that is so outstanding?
Yeah.
But it really was. It really was outstanding. And we should give them the credit for it, not doubt their feat.
It's so insulting. It's so insulting for me. Oh, my goodness. It put in my nerves, of all speakers.
Give her six quavers, then pause.
She sent us four quavers, a group of five quavers, a group of four semi-quavers.
These phrases have in common are five signals.
I hope somebody's taken all this down.
What are we saying to each other?
Seems they're trying to teach us a basic tonal vocabulary.
It's the first day of school, fellas.
Take everything from the lady.
Five, two,
all of her patterns,
two, three, three, one.
We have a translation airlock on their audio signal. We're taking over this conversation now.
And that was the soundtrack and a special theme of Encounters of the Third Kind.
This is La Ventana Americana. If you have any questions or want to know more about today's show, you can go to laventanaamericana.com.
Thank you very much. But before we leave, talking about education from science, which we both of us are mothers and that's a very dear subject to us, we have some questions from kids about all this. And
can I mention something?
Yes.
So this is a great opportunity to mention that myself and also Pascal, we are creating what is called STEM for Space. It's a new group of former and current NASA educators just to promote STEM education using the space as a tool to expand STEM in schools and private industries and excite kids on this new technology advances and sciences using space as a fascinating factor. Personally, I appreciate this opportunity to talk about with you
guys.
Yeah,
I'm glad you said that, Marcelo.
The quiz question.
The quiz question.
Yeah,
okay.
Let's go.
Go ahead.
I am Daniel. I am already 5. I have a question. How do I get to be an astronaut and be in the mission to Mars?
That was the first one.
Beautiful.
It is a beautiful question. So it's almost a two-part question. Daniel, you can never be sure you will become an astronaut. Nobody can be sure, but there are things you can do to increase your chances. And certainly to be an astronaut today, you have to be good in science. You have to work hard if it doesn't come easy. For me, for example, science was never easy. I had to work hard at it. But I always thought that it was rewarding if you spend the time to... it's not just science. I would say it's anything that's STEM. So STEM, that's science, technology, engineering, math. These are subjects that are not necessarily fun all the time. But if you make a good effort to try to understand what's going on there, you will find a lot of joy and satisfaction in science, because it explains what you see around you. So I find that very useful. So astronauts really have to have a strong background in science, technology, engineering, math. But we will also be needing, in the case of Mars, different kinds of specialty. There will be astronauts who will be specialized in looking for rocks. Lots of rocks on Mars. There'll be astronauts who have the specialty of looking for life. That's a big question we have about Mars. There'll be astronauts who have to be able to fix spacesuits and robots and the spacecraft, including the plumbing and the toilet and the dishwasher. I'm kidding about the dishwasher, although maybe. The laundry machine. We will need astronauts who understand electronics, the electrical system. Pilots to fly the spacecraft to Mars and back. And you can see that, in fact, an astronaut who will go to Mars will... You can't have one person for each specialty. There'd be too many people in the crew. So each crew member on a mission to Mars will have to have several specialties. So your goal, Daniel, in life is not only to be good at science, but to become an expert in different kinds of scientific fields. So if you can be a medical doctor and at the same time a geologist and at the same time a pilot and, if possible, at the same time an expert in repairing toilets and plumbing, then you might have a chance
Great.
Of making it to Mars.
Marcelo.
Oh, another thing that will help you is to be a good person and communicate with person and live with very diverse persons around you. Express your emotion, be calm, and be prepared for emergency, but at the same time, be aware of the wonders of the universe, what you will see, what is beyond that what you're seeing. All that wonder and live with people that you respect is key. When you will be alone with a group of people on Mars, how do you relate with those people who are very important? So you need to be a good person.
Great. Very now the nice. Next questions.
My name is Gabrielle. I'm 70 years old. I read your book and I have a few questions. What inspired you to make the book? And what inspired you to go to NASA? How much water do you need in the rocket ship? How much oxygen and hydrogen do you need? Water is oxygen and hydrogen. If you separate them, you can make electricity. Are you using that? And how does it feel like out in space?
That's a good series of questions, Gabrielle, but let me answer the key ones. When I was your age, Gabrielle, I think, humans were going to the moon, and it was a very exciting time in the history of humankind. I remember at your age being able to find books that were showing me the inside of a spacecraft or how a spacesuit was designed and works. I remember finding books that imagined the landscape of the moon. You know, as I grew up, the next place to go has become Mars. And I wanted to write a book that would do the same thing for kids today, that it would show the inside of a spacecraft going to Mars. It would show how a Mars spacesuit would be designed. What types of landscapes would you explore on Mars? A book like that didn't quite exist out there, especially a nonfiction book. So it's a book that really has science and technology in it. It's published by Scholastic, so I had a lot of help from people at Scholastic to make it accessible for kids between ages 9 and 12. But if you're younger and super smart, you can enjoy the book as well. And if you are older and less smart, you can enjoy it too.
Thank you, Pascal.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is what prompted me to write this book. This is what, everybody's laughing here, but this is what prompted me to write this book, Mission Mars, to understand that going to Mars is a possibility in our future. As far as the hydrogen and the oxygen is concerned, yes, human beings need a lot of things. That's why going to Mars is expensive. It's because we have to take water, we have to take oxygen for us to breathe, we have to take food. So lots of supplies have to be taken with us. The water, incidentally, we will recycle some of it. So in other words, we don't have to take all the water we will need every day, in a big tank of fresh water. We can reuse some of the water that we're still talking about large amounts of water that we have to take up front to go to Mars, large amounts of food. And interestingly, if you read my book, I talk about this. Food and water are somewhat helpful in protecting you from radiation. You want your spacecraft to be surrounded by your water tanks and your food supplies. The water that you consume, of course, gets replaced by recycling. The food that you eat, however, it doesn't get recycled. When you go to the bathroom and poop, your poop is something that is not something that you can eat again, of course, or recycle. But you don't want to throw it away because your poop contains hydrogen as well. And hydrogen is what protects you from radiation. You want to put your poop bags back on the walls of your spacecraft to protect you from radiation. So it's sort of interesting. Going to Mars means that you fly to Mars in a can of food and water, and then you come back from Mars by the time you've eaten a lot of the food. You're flying back from Mars to the Earth in a can of water and poop.
That's a good strategy for NASA, I think. Poop radiation shielding. Yes, that's good. Pascal and I, we have a dream. And I think I can talk about me, but I was going to the space. I want to be an astronaut. I think Pascal, secretly or not secretly, also he wanted to do that when he was a kid. So, and you know, for many reasons, you know, in my case, I was in Argentina, young, you know, I have no chance to do that. But at the end, I was able to participate in the space program, and that was like a touch my dreams with my hands, and that was fantastic, and I still do. So I think. Think about space, a place to go, not only to maybe save the world in the future, but also just to learn to discover new things. And it's a wonderful place to be. It's a very dangerous place to be, by the way. But I think humans will be able to go to Mars and live there. It's a matter of time.
Agreed.
There are a ton of social networking websites, but here is one that stands apart for a very special reason. This one has the potential to save lives. It's MatchingDonors.com. MatchingDonors.com links organ donors with people in need of a transplant. In the US, 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most for kidneys. If you ever consider becoming a living organ donor, or if you are in need of an organ transplant, visit matchingdonors.com and give the gift of life. This is La Ventana Americana. If you have any questions or want to know more about today's show, you can go to laventanaamericana.com.
I would like you to recommend us a good sci-fi movie.
Pascal, you start.
Recommended from an astronaut. Come on, it's a must.
There, There are lots
the
of,
one from SETI.
There are lots of.
You can recommend three or four. It's okay.
Yeah. My favorite sci-fi movies are the ones that are sort of well done in the areas where we know
exactly
how things are supposed to work and are taking some freedom in areas where we are not sure. So 2001, A Space Odyssey, of course, is a classic. It has elements of realism, but it also has some elements of fantasy, in fact, but in ways that I find, you know, sort of acceptable for science fiction. That's just my taste. Mm-hmm. You know, I like hardcore physics-based science fiction. Mm-hmm. Another movie that I like that's not very well known, and in fact, it was directed by a Spanish director. It's called Stranded. And it's about a crew going to Mars, and they actually have a really, really rough landing on Mars. There are not a lot of good Mars movies, so this is the one that this is, in my view, the best Mars exploration movie that was ever made, even though it has its own problems. It follows the destiny of a crew that essentially crash lands on Mars, but they can still live. But the clock is ticking, and their life support system is running out. And, of course, some go out to explore just to make the most out of their time on Mars, and they make an incredible discovery. So I won't reveal it. I don't want to spoil.
You don't spoil the movie.
I don't want to spoil it, but
Kubrick, 2001, it's an old movie, yeah. Right?
It's still ahead of its time.
What about Contact, maybe inspired by a SETI scientist?
Contact is cool too. Very cool.
any other?
I think you actually have listed the three that are my favorites, Contact, 2001, and Stranded.
And what about you, Marcelo?
Well, I agree with Pascal. Pascal started with me. We have a huge collection of science fiction movies, so we are kind of fanatic of this. Mm-hmm. In my view, 2001 is still the top. And even today, the depiction of the technology at that time is still accurate, even better than Gravity in many ways, that the last movie that we saw with Sandra Bullock, by the way. And second, Contact, of course. And the third play for me, for many reasons, is Close Encounters of the Third Kind. These three are my picks.
Well, I think that this is like a dream to ask a space yes. professional astronaut for a good science movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen Gravity yet, to be fair. I heard a lot of good things about it, also some criticism, but I haven't seen it. So.
Well, you know one thing, without making an advertisement for movies, Escape from Earth, it's a movie for kids, but it was hilarious because they claim that in something like Area 51, they find these aliens that actually are the responsible for Facebook, Wikipedia.
I think for kids, I don't remember the name, but there are two movies that really caught my attention. One is that an astronaut, a human astronaut, land in another alien planet. So the human astronaut is the alien in that planet. It's really fantastic. And the other one is that about flies. I think two or three flies that go inside the Apollo 11 mission. So the flies go on to the moon and back. So that was for kids, a really nice.
We've seen all those. And also the one about the monkeys that are sent for an expedition and they get sucked by a wormhole and go to another planet far away. Thank you very much. I'm sorry for keeping you this long. We're fascinated with the topic.
Is that we're already?
It was wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. It's wonderful, and I hope you come again.
I love the show, the dynamics, and whatever I can.
It's really good.
I'd love to.
You guys are good. Great.
Thank you.
That really works. The chemistry is really good.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. Thank you. Very seriously, it's good, actually. So.
This is La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
Esto es La Ventana,
La Ventana Americana.
Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana de Radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
From KCSU Stanford 90.1.
Desde KCSU Stanford. Stanford.
KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM.
This is La Ventana Americana from KCSU Stanford 90.1.
KZSU
90.1
FM.
And the program is La Ventana Americana.
A window to the Latin universe from Stanford to the world. I am Isabel Jubes.
And I'm Elizabeth Trachtenberg.
Welcome, bienvenido.
Goodbye, see you next week.
Wow.
Welcome to another of my shows. I am your host and producer, Isabel Jubes. This is an archive show of La Ventana Americana. You can find this show and all the information related to it, together with more of my archive productions, on StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. Visit our website and be part of this, giving me your opinions and more about your ideas.